You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode, 499.95, maybe, whatever. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario, actually showing up for the show, unlike what happened last week, but, you know, you can't control when it rains. Joining me out of, out of a place that my children are scared to go, Mr. John Gentile.
Adam White, listen, man, people need to get their shit together. They need to put on the mask. They need to, you know, do social distancing. They need to realize that, listen, I can't be down the beach, you know, like holding hands with my you know, friends, singing and dancing. You know, they need to get their shit together. And also, maybe now's a good time to, you know, quit ordering so much crap from overseas and order so much crap from Amazon and be a little bit more self-sufficient. That's what I'm saying, Adam.
Victory Gardens. One of my zucchinis is not looking.
Victory Gardens. I know who did it.
It was one of those things during the war where, like, everyone on the homestead in America would plant vegetable gardens so that they wouldn't be taxing the resources that were to be sent to the fighting men and women.
Well, I'm all for that, but that, and, you know, as Paisans, that's nothing new for us. We've been having our own quote Victory Gardens for the last 4,000 years.
I know. There was a big surge in home planting in Niagara right before the season, and it really fucked me up because I was expecting to just go get my normal stuff, and I couldn't because all the garden centers around here were just crushed by everyone. And I know it's a bummer, but not a bummer. Joining us once again, Hallie Bullitt in Jersey. You're in Jersey now, right?
I'm in Jersey. It still feels weird to hear you say that, but that is where I am.
Having successfully escaped from New York, although given the numbers, maybe you should stay in New York, right? Like, is New York now not one of the safe spots?
I think New York and New Jersey are so close that they're kind of hand in hand with stuff. So I think we were partnered in our pain earlier, and we are partnered in our respite right now.
So I have an honest question for you too, and this is not like a usual like bag on the Americans thing. But we keep getting news stories up here that, like, there was one I saw the other day where it was like they were interviewing like long haul Canadian truckers that crossed the border to go like deliver stuff down to the southern US and then come back. And I don't know if this is actually representative of the opinion of the trucker culture or anything like that. But these guys were just coming back and saying how like terrified they were of the situation and what's going on and the amount of people that are just like wandering around as if nothing's happening. And we keep getting stories like that, or news stories in our news about how like some American couple crossed the border and they said they were going to Alaska because that's one of the reasons you can cross the border into Canada right now is if you promise to go straight to Alaska, but then they don't and they go to their cottage somewhere in Alberta, and then the cops, you know, chase them down and fine them and kick them back over. And we keep getting stories like that. What's the vibe like from your end?
I mean, you know, we got, pardon my French, we got our asses kicked. So, you know, I think maybe those truckers are encountering people like up near the border where it probably was never very bad. So I think it's hard for people to really understand the threat when they never really had to like see it or see the effects, or they haven't yet. if those people to drive anywhere within like a, you know, 100 mile radius of New York City, people take it seriously. They take it quite seriously. I mean, everyone's a little traumatized. So I think it just depends where you go.
John, how's your folks? They are grocery folk, are they not?
Yeah.
So are they?
I mean, but most people are pretty cool. Once in a while, I will have somebody come in, you know, without a mask on, and then they say, you know, you got to wear the mask. Actually, what's nice is like people don't realize that, like, if you run a produce market or whatever, like, you're so much more of a target for legal liability than the average person, just because people are like looking for problems. So like someone will come in without a mask. Not many people, maybe one person every few, well, maybe one person a day or so. Most of the people shopping will say, you need to get out and put on a mask. This is a produce store. And they kind of shame them out, which I think is the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah. Produce is one of those areas where it's, I keep running into situations where I'm not sure what to do, where I'm like, I really want to touch these peppers. Like, I don't just want to like put the claw out and put one in the bag, because 9 times out of 10, I'm going to grab one of these peppers and they're not going to be the firmness that I require out of my peppers. But I probably shouldn't be doing that right now. It's very concerning.
Well, you must be shopping a pretty lousy produce market, Adam, if you've got unfirm peppers, if you've got squishy
John,
peppers.
John, I'm shopping at a pretty lousy produce market, and this is Canada. We don't have great peppers in the best of times. So you gotta get in there.
But peppers do well in cold weather. I mean, like you can keep a pepper in an icebox for a long time.
I'm just saying, just my experience is that you go in sometimes and the peppers are wonderful, and you go in sometimes and they're just like mushy and horrible. And if you were to go home and you bought one of those peppers blind, you'd feel like a complete asshole. Just saying. Anyways,
they ship them from Holland sometimes, Adam, from Holland. Holland peppers. Another reason why Netherlands is the greatest place in the world. Great peppers. Mm.
So anyways, this is Punk News Podcast. We talk about things that happened in the punk rock universe, punknews.org, specifically, I guess, stuff that orients around that, which is a website that that you may have been to at some point.
Or the produce section.
Yeah.
Or we give you the news from the produce section.
This is the problem with the show, is that, like, John comes from produce folk. Like, I worked the produce freezer in the grocery store when it was my first job, and it's become one of the many reasons why John and I can't quit each other, even though we don't really like each other at all. So
I really wanted to contribute to that produce conversation. Actually, I had many things to say, but I figured we should move along to music.
Listen, we need to talk about produce. Alan, what do you have to say about peppers?
I don't have anything to say about peppers, but I have to say that I don't really like tomatoes, but I had the best tomato of my life when I was in Canada. And so then I had this image in my mind that, like, all produce in Canada is just like way better than American produce.
Listen, people like to talk trash on America, but honestly, produce wise, America is pretty top ranking. Like, vegetables and fruits, it's tough to beat the USA. It really is. I mean, we got California, we got Florida, we got Georgia, we got Idaho potatoes. You know, we got the warm climate, the cold climate.
None of your moral failings or your failings as a democracy to have anything whatsoever to do with the fine produce that comes from.
Listen, Adam, you can nag all you want, but you know, produce wise, we're kicking the crap out of pretty much everybody. I mean, really, it's the truth. Go to Poland, see what kind of vegetables you get there. See what kind of oranges you get in Poland.
Ooh, okay, so if you're Polish and you want to write us about how good your peppers are, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. John, is there any mail that we need to touch on, produce related or not, before we?
We're going to skip mail today. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org, because we've got a very special episode. Well, actually, we don't have a very special episode, but we've got some heavy topic and then we're going to talk about wacky stuff. And this is not it's a heavy topic, but there's no moral or there's no conclusion. It's just something to consider. About once every 3 or 4 months, I get an email, and it's almost always in the same format. It's from somebody that doesn't know me, but they kind of write to me like they know me. And this just happened, I think it was today or yesterday, I can't remember. But I got an email, and I'm not going to name the band, and you might be guessing who the band is, but I can guarantee you, I don't think it's a band that we've ever talked about on the Punk Loose podcast before. Not that I can recall anyway, so you're probably not going to guess who it is. But they said, John, have you heard about the allegations from Billy Smith, who's not a real person? And then I'm like, well, what do you mean? What are you talking about allegations? And then they sent me back about five links or six links of their Instagram from 2012 to 2014. And what Billy Smith of this well-known band did is he took pictures of women's butts and like put them on Instagram and put, man, I like those cans, you know, which is weird. And you think I'm like exaggerating, but like he basically put, man, I love those cans. Like that's what he put. And then in an interview like from literally like 11 years ago, they said like, well, what's your favorite movie? And he named some movie that is a controversial movie, but was a movie that was widely shown in normal movie theaters. That is if you look at Gene Siskel's top 100 list, it's probably on there, right?
Wait. I get why you're not naming the band, but why can't you name the movie? Now I've got to know what's this controversial movie?
Ah, well, okay. The movie is Lolita, you know. Which is,
okay.
You know,
yep.
You know, so listen. So I'm like, all right. So I said, well, these are like Instagram links. Like, what is he being accused of? And then they're like, a lot of people think he's unsafe or something like that. And so it's like, here's the dilemma. I have this dilemma like once every 4 months. And it's like, A, I don't want to be a cop. People often attack Punk News, and me especially. He's like, John, why are you filtering what we should and should not see? You know, we don't want you to be a gatekeeper. And ironically, I feel like I'm not a gatekeeper at Punk News. But then why are you asking me to be the moral authority as to whether someone has or has not done something improper? Also, like if you go into this kind of thing and a person isn't bad or they've done something just a little bad but not that bad, you can really kind of destroy their lives and like, is that fair? But on the other hand, if like they said, John, this person raped somebody and here's the proof, well, I think we kind of have a duty to report on that, because if somebody's unsafe, truly unsafe, that is, like actually dangerous, then I think we have to report on that. And so it's a moral quandary that I often have. But I don't want to be a cop. I don't want to be Columbo. But on the other hand, is I definitely don't want to give truly bad people a free pass. And so it's like, but also like there's a lot of hidden agendas in that thing too. Like sometimes it's just somebody's got a bone to pick with somebody, or it's certain people might think some things are bad and some people think, well, that's not that bad. And we've had this discussion many times before about like Jimmy Page. Like Jimmy Page was kind of a rotten dude, but I still love listening to Led Zeppelin, you know. And also like putting pictures of women's behinds on Instagram, I would say it's creepy, but it doesn't make you a sex creep. It just makes you kind of a creepy, tacky guy. Should you be crucified for that? But maybe there's worse stuff under there, and that's just on the surface. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel it's my job to be the cop of the punk world. But on the other hand, we do have somewhat of a duty. Someone actually is bad to report on that. So I don't know. I mean, I have this moral quandary up once every 3 or 4 months, and I always end up just pushing it to the side and say, well, you know, if there's bad stuff out there, it'll come up. You know, I don't need to, you know, I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not. I don't know.
I mean, I think like, you know, yeah, because it's no, I don't think when people reach out to you, I could be wrong, but I don't think they're not asking you to judge it. I don't think maybe I'm wrong. I don't think they're asking you to make a judgment. They're just saying, hey, maybe this is worth you reporting, you know, like, I do think there's a way to report it, to just be like, well, people have noticed that this dude has a creepy Instagram. I mean, it might just be helpful. You know, maybe there's women that are fans of this band that would just kind of want to know. Maybe they, you know, and maybe there's women that are fans of the band that would look at that old Instagram posts and be like, well, this is just like, this is, yeah, tacky. But it doesn't bother me, and I'm still going to listen to this band. And maybe there's, you know, men too, whatever. I shouldn't just say that only women would be offended by that. But, you know, maybe there's fans that are going to look at that and say, you know what, actually, that really does bother me. I don't really want to support this band anymore. But, you know, are you just sort of putting the information out there so that people can, like, kind of be informed about what they're supporting and what they're, you know, or I don't know. But it makes me feel bad. It makes you feel that that responsibility so heavily, you know, that you really do feel like you're being asked to be a cop about it. You know, that's because that's yeah.
I do feel like I'm asked to be a cop, and it's like, John, we've got this lead, you know, now go get him. You know,
yeah. And this is something that we've been, I mean, more so these days with, you know, the way that the culture kind of works in the wake of Me Too, but we've always had this struggle with punk news where it's partly something that we've invited by the way that we've operated. Whereas punk news has always treated itself as like the, oh, there's some horrible feedback happening there. I'll see if I can cut that out. We were always treated as like the CNN style punk rock publication. Whereas back in the day when we were first started and there was a lot of other music blogs that were doing something similar to what we were doing, they were way more prone to post something that was opinion based or gossip based or something like that. But punk news always sort of treated the stuff that we were putting out as following the rules of journalism, even though that a lot of us aren't, or most of us, I think, are not from the world of, you know, we didn't go to J school. That's not what we're from. But we always like took it as a point of pride that we were doing things like the more proper journalistic way and not just like as a gossip blog or an entertainment blog kind of thing. And I think because of that, we over the years have gotten a lot more trust from people, either when there was something good to report, but also when there was, you know, something salacious that they wanted to talk about. And then we would go and we would look at these stories that are coming in and try to come up with the angle by which we could talk about them. The problem with something like this is that it's hard to find the angle for it where you, by bringing light to it, doesn't imply a certain degree of judgment or like a certain degree of condemnation. So if we were to take something like this, say, I'm going to talk completely in hypotheticals here because I don't know what the I wasn't on the receiving end of this piece of information. But if someone was to come and to email me and say, you know, oh, punk news should talk about this. Look at what this guy's posted on his Instagram. It's creepy. Well, it's like, well, what's our how do we approach that? Because we wouldn't make a story where the headline is person appears to be creepy on Instagram, because then that then is punk news as the organization implying that the behavior is creepy. And that's maybe like getting out of the journalistic, you know, objectivity that we're trying to maintain. Right. And we're implying something. So we can't do that. So then you can go at it and be like, oh, you know, like people are implying that, or people are concerned that this thing that is on Instagram is creepy, and you can treat it that way. But the problem then is that if we don't have anything that we're citing as the source there for quote unquote people, then we sound like we're Trump, right? Because then we sound like, oh, people keep saying that this is happening. And it's like, well, who's people? Like, what's the actual source there? So these things are always easier if it first happens somewhere else, and then we can actually report on the controversy, and that is usually the safe way out of it. And I feel like I've even encouraged that with people sometimes over the years, where if they come to us and they're like, you know, you should go stick your neck out about this thing, and there's no source, it's more like, well, hey, you person that is concerned about this, you go make it an issue, and then we can report on you making it an issue, because then there's a story there where there's two parties in it. But if one of the two parties in the story is punk news, even if we're coming to even if no one's going to argue that, you know, these things are creepy that we're reporting on or whatever, like it shouldn't be punk news as being like one of the two parties in this potential conflict. Like we have to be reporting on something that's happening. It's like it's the same reason like Wikipedia doesn't want you to go write your own profile. It's because you're too involved at that point. So that's always sort of been the struggle for us, is to figure out how to address this stuff without us being the ones that are making it happen in the first place, for all sorts of reasons. Also, I'm pretty sure real news organizations have a certain amount of, you know, like legal protections, not just like implied by prior case law legal protections, but like lawyers that actually work for them. And we totally, I don't think we do. I mean, John's a lawyer, but he's not our lawyer. So I don't think it works that way.
Well, but can I just ask, I mean, I'm not saying I think you guys should report on this or not. I'm not really weighing in, but like, I'm not sure in this particular instance, like, it's not like a he said, she said kind of thing. And I don't really see why the source totally matters. It's like, right? Like, John, didn't you say like you can just go on Instagram and see that this guy made these posts? Like, aren't they still?
Right. So as of this morning.
So then I don't really see, I don't know. Then I don't, I mean, I could see you guys maybe just not wanting to report on it for other reasons, but that doesn't totally seem relevant here because it's not like you're saying, oh, someone called to our attention that something might have happened or that someone claimed, you know, it's there. It's who cares about the sources? You don't need to, who cares what the source is? It's there on the internet. You know what I mean?
Well, it's just that it is, but go, especially taking something that is, say, like, years old and all of a sudden dragging it up and making a story out of it implies a certain amount of intent on our part about why we're making a story out of it. And again, if you're a legitimate news organization where, you know, you've sort of got the, you're used to being challenged on this kind of stuff and you've kind of got the protections in play and like, and you know that if you're going to get like a, you know, a slap kind of style lawsuit or a wonky cease and desist or something like that, like, you know how to handle that stuff. That's one thing. But when it's just like, it's a bunch of us volunteering for shit, you know, if all of a sudden one of us steps too far outside of the realm of, you know, what punk news usually does, and we go and like drum up a huge amount of controversy about something, even if we're, say, in the right, then we've potentially brought down like an expensive legal heat on a quote unquote organization that has no, you know, no actual money, and we're not actually employees of, and it just gets dicey there. I'd be hesitant about all of a sudden like bringing the hammer down, because then I could turn around and just be like, I don't actually work here, peace out, and turn off my email, right? So it's strange. Like we're in the middle. It's because we're not real.
I get that.
You should pretty tacky post, I'll tell you that. Shawnee, want to ride with me? Then he put, my town is the rippingest town. It's tacky. Anyways, listen, people. Welcome to Punk News. Let's play a song, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss them. Who's got something to play?
Let's play a song by the band we're not talking about. No. It's not. I'm not implying that whoever... Now, see, now I've poisoned it, so now whoever's going to play something is going to
I'll play something... I'll play track, and let's talk about a guy who is just the best, man. Dick Lucas of Subhumans, of Culture Shock, of Citizen Fish. Dick Lucas is the man, and he is the real deal. And whatever you think Dick Lucas is from his music and his interviews, that's who Dick Lucas is. I mean, you were talking about a class act. We're talking Dick Lucas. And I'm not trying to be cute, but I think Culture Shock might be my favorite Dick Lucas band. And this past couple weeks, I've really gotten into them. And if the listeners don't know, Citizen Fish, of course, one of the earliest or almost earliest anarcho-punk bands, incredibly influential on the punk scene, almost as influential as, say, Crass, I was almost as influential as Crass on the punk scene. The ska band is Citizen Fish, but the band in between is this band called Culture Shock, which in the States, not a whole lot of people know about. They put out a box set a few years ago that has all their early recordings, and now they just put out another album, another outtakes album, and I think an EP. Yeah, an album, an EP, an outtakes album, and the original album. Anyways, this is something like Culture Shock. Go check them out. I'm not trying to be cute because I know Subhumans is like the I guess more pure punk band, and Citizen Fish is the fun band. But I love Culture Shock. It's so good. This is something like Culture Shock. Check it out.
Yes, keeping our
right, we're back. The big news this week, and I guess maybe not unexpected, but definitely big news as far as the Punk News universe is concerned, is that the Fest 19 has officially been postponed. It's been postponed all the way until 2021. They're doing the full year hop. And this is, of course, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The festival announced its lineup back in April and had kind of very hopefully been putting out which bands were playing and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we're crossing their fingers throughout the summer. And it really felt like it was maybe something that could happen. But it is clear now that it is not. So the organizers have stated Fest 19 is being postponed until October 29th, 30th, and 31st of 2021. We know it's been a hard year for everyone so far, and we do not think it's possible to safely hold a music festival anytime soon. Luckily, we've confirmed a ton of bands for the new dates, and we've got more coming still. If you bought a pass, hotel, or merch, please look out for an email from Saravasti with instructions about how to roll those over or get a refund. And please continue to do your part and push our leaders to protect people over profits, stand up for positive social change, and wear a mask. Thank you for your patience, and we hope to see everyone at Fest 19 in 2021. Now, the headliners on Fest 19, in case you forget, Hot Water Music, they were going to play a couple nights. They were going to play A Flight and a Crash in its entirety the one night, and then Fan Requests the second. Cursive, we're going to play the 20th year anniversary of Domestika. Sam I Am, we're going to play the 20th anniversary of Ashtray. The Flatliners, we're going to play the 10th anniversary of Cavalcade. And then you had acts like Frank Turner, Sparta, Red City Radio, Strike Anywhere, Torch, Good Riddance, Modern Life is War, Wilhelm Scream, Tim Barry, and many, many, many more. So Fest 19 has moved. I believe earlier when we were on here, we all talked about how Fest was going to be a big, huge relief for everyone, right? Like a big outpouring of stress relief. But that's clearly not going to happen anymore. So what do you guys think here? Actually, when we get to the end of this, I will give the new lineup, because the lineup has shifted a little bit, and I'll circle back to that. But let's discuss this first. So, any thoughts? Like, at what point did it become evident that this was maybe not going to happen?
I mean, to me, even when we were talking about it last time, and we were saying how amazing it would be if it happened, I still knew it wasn't going to happen. So in a way, I'm like kind of relieved. Honestly, it's like I do feel like less stress just having it just announced that it's canceled, because it was like for people to keep like looking forward to it and all these bands and plans. And I don't know if it's because I was in New York where things were like such a shit show, but I was like, this festival is not happening. And it was like stressing me out to like think of people like getting excited about it as if it was happening. So I actually sort of just feel like the Band-Aid's been torn off. It's not happening. You know, we can just start looking forward, hopefully, to 2021, where I think it's a lot more realistic that we can all be gathering in that kind of a way.
I feel like I remember the time of hope, you know, the big festival that we drive out to every year is Sappy Fest in New Brunswick, and it's always on the first I was going to say the August long weekend, but I don't know if you guys have that. Do you have a long weekend on the first weekend of August? Is that a thing?
No, weekend of August.
Oh, okay. So like, there's one on the first weekend of August. It's a bullshit holiday up here. It doesn't mean anything. It's called like the August Civic Holiday or something. It sounds like totally fucking Soviet. Like someone just like came up with it because they had to meet a quota. But in any case, there is one, and that's the one we drive out to. And it was pretty obvious for a long time that it was not going to happen before it was formally announced that they were doing a similar skip to the next year. But I remember like there were early months of this year that we were just still thinking, you know what? This shit will get sorted out by, if it gets sorted out by June, then we'll probably be okay. And So, I don't know, John. Any thoughts on Fest? Fest calling it quits.
Speaking of weird holidays, I wish we still had a Saturnalia. That'd be cool to have Saturnalia. With regards to Fest, when it was initially announced, I thought when it was first announced, I'm like, it seems liffy. And I'm like, this seems kind of irresponsible. But on the other hand, it's like this is where they get their money from all year, I think. So you kind of got to do it or else you're really going to be hurt for the whole year. So I don't think I can morally blame them for announcing it to begin with. But I will say the lifespan of Fest 2020 was surprisingly short-lived. They announced it, and then like a month later, they're like, oh, we're not doing it this year. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a good thing it's a good thing they're not doing it this year. And it sucks, man. It sucks. Like it, Philadelphia said like, no real live shows till February 2021. But I mean, listen, like we tried to half-ass it, if you will, and it didn't work. So we got to buckle down and just get through it and get this stupid thing out of our hair, which is exhausting. It's annoying. And even some of the people on the Punk News podcast are like, well, I'm getting fed up. I just say, give it to me. But that's not how it works in real life. In real life, when you just have this give-it-to-me attitude, it's circulating around and around. It never goes away and hurts and kills a lot of people and damages the economy. So listen, it sucks. We just got to be serious about this thing and say, this is like Rocky 2. Rocky 1, we trained to fight it. We stepped up there, and we still lost, but we went the distance. But we didn't really go the distance. But this is Rocky 2. And we're like, all right, we're really going to train and go the distance. And we knock out Apollo Creed, even though Apollo Creed probably is the better boxer. And that's what we got to do. We listen, people, it's for real now. Let's focus. Let's not be stupid. And let's get this out of our hair. Respect to Fest for, you know, losing a lot of cash probably, but making the responsible choice. And let's just do it, baby. Let's do it so we can have Summer Soiree 4 in February 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like that's really been the opinion that I keep hearing up here from people especially because like we're fortunate enough right now in our area to be in like a lull, right? Like our curve went down, thankfully, but everyone is now, even though it went down, now everyone's sort of ramping up the, I don't want to say paranoia because that makes it sound like it's something I'm against. Like everyone's ramping up the precautions around here now, especially as they start to open up more of the places in Ontario. Because we keep looking at Florida and we're like, oh no, because like Florida has the same population basically as Ontario. So right now it's sort of like the dark mirror of what's going on up here. But also because like we don't want to go back, right? Like we don't want to get back in the shit. So on the one hand, you have, you know, the government in Ontario is coming on and saying like, oh, we're gonna reopen bars in a week, and everyone's just, you know, we're all just like looking over our shoulder down south and being like, okay, more masks then. We need more masks. Like we're at the same point where all of the cases are going down here. We're starting to see like mandatory mask laws and stuff like that come in because everyone's just freaking out that we're gonna fuck it up. That we're not going to take it seriously enough, and then we're going to be right back in the same boat. So, eek. For the record, Fest 19, the 2021 version thereof, I have a question about that. We'll come back to it in a sec. The 2020 version thereof is now headlined by Gorilla Biscuits, Frank Turner, Lawrence Arms, Cursive, Murder by Death, The Menzingers, Sparta, Good Riddance Torch, Teenage Bottle Rocket, Strike Anywhere, Modern Life is War, Comeback Kid, Wilhelm Scream. And there are full album sets by Beach Slang, Mock Orange, The Farewell Bend, and Blacklist Royals so far that have been announced for that. John's buddies World Inferno are still on the bill for the next year's version. So two things. One, stupid question. Is this Fest 19 or is this Fest 20? A lot of the festivals that I've been following up here are inevitably like doing an online thing instead, where it's like, oh, you know, the weekend that we would have normally had the event, we're going to have like a bunch of bands doing live streams and we'll try to make, you know, try to make something happen. And I feel that then that is, like, if Fest was to do that, is that not Fest 19? And then it just happens to be the Fest that didn't happen, and then Fest 20 is next year. That's question one.
Well, are they doing that? Or have they said they're going to do anything sort of online to a placeholder?
Well, I mean, like, Fest in particular has been, like, trickling out online stuff kind of, like, all summer long. So I don't know if they're doing, like, a big to-do that weekend or anything. But if they do, like, because a lot of these festivals are, I'm like, does that count? Can you just punt it? Or is it one of these, like, you know what, we've printed the shirts, so fuck it, it's still Fest 19.
Tegan and Sarah did something pretty cool. They had a bunch of tour shirts printed. Actually, I want to buy one, I think. They printed a bunch of tour shirts, and the tour was canceled. So they put the shirts back under the printer and put canceled right on top of it. So that's pretty funny.
Oh, that's not bad. So the... I had the... This is just an anecdote. This is not anything. Sappy, the fest that I tend to go to that I keep talking about on here. The guy that curates it is a guy named Steve Lampke, who is the guitarist from the Constantines. And he sent me a message the other day, and he was like, hey, you were one of our pre-orders, and you never got back to me about whether you wanted a refund or whether you were going to carry your stuff forward to 2021. And I was like, oh, I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, just, you know, carry it forward, that, you know, I'm going to be there next year, so fuck it, do it. And he's like, all right, great. I'm going to take your ticket and I'll put it towards the future. Thank you. And I'm like, all right. And then I responded to him something like, I mean, you know, it's either going to be the end. It's either that this is the end of the world. And if it is, a refund for a concert ticket, it means very little to me. Or it's not. So if it's not, it just seems like the obvious choice that I don't need a refund right now. Thank you. And I thought that was very, very forward-looking insight on my part, but if I didn't get any particular response to it, he was just like, see you on the other side. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm not as clever. Not as clever as I thought I was. John, is everything formally out of the woods now as far as your events?
Well, Dan, we were going to have Dan Burt's record release show on December, August 1, but of course that's not going to happen now. So I don't know if Summer Soiree 4 is definitely going to happen. If it's got to be online, if it's going to be online in November, it's still going to be Summer Soiree 4. Cause I will not, I'm not OCD, but I have like weird, like things that I want to make happen. And it would bother me to skip a year. So Summer Soiree 4 might be online this year, or it might just be me in my basement. Like maybe I'll play like a guitar that I don't even know how to play. And like, tell everyone that's what Summer Soiree 4 was me playing a show to no one, something like that. Summer Soiree 4 is going to happen this year. It'll probably be online. And then Summer Soiree 5 next year. Well, also, I don't want to put off 5 because I've got some insane ideas for 5. So I don't want to wait another year for that. So.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that how, I mean, like, it's one thing I think to have my stupid question about, like, is it 19 or 20? But the, like, I wonder from the point where we're past all this and we can look back on it, do we not want that one strange year to sort of forever live in infamy in the list where all this crazy shit happened? Like, I think it makes sense from that sense to have, like, you know, Summer Soiree 4 was the one where no people attended.
Well, as long as it happens, I'm happy with it happening in any weird context. You know what I mean? Like, so maybe I'll just have somebody like playing on their porch and like people just walking by will count as the audience. That'd be kind of funny.
There is a, there's an artist up here. Actually, no, I've talked to her. I don't need to try to hedge who it is. So B.A. Johnson, who is on Punk News mixtape number one, number one? We have him on one or two?
He was on number two. He was on the Band from the PC mixtape.
Was he on Band from the PC? Okay. So anyway, so BA, who is a kind of like a comedic one-man band up here, who sings a lot of songs about being like a lower-class skid. So what he realized was, and this is a guy, by the way, that tours relentlessly, like is on the road, you know, in a van driving around Canada for most of the year, plays an absolute, like, astonishing number of shows. And clearly, like, that's the dude's whole livelihood and everything. So what he realized is that, so the rules in Ontario right now is that, at least the rules in Ontario up until a week ago were, like, if you were doing a gathering outside, the gathering, I think you could have up to 50 people, but they had to be doing the, like, the 2 meters apart kind of, or the, sorry, the 6 feet apart kind of thing. And it, you know, we're allowed to have these, like, family groupings of 10 people where we don't have to distance ourselves. So he realized that one of the things that he could do was he could drive up, park in your driveway, and out of the back of his van, play his, like, one-man band set for, like, you and 9 of your friends that happen to be sitting in lawn chairs in your driveway or something like that. And he started doing this and driving around, and I just keep seeing, like, pictures of it. And he's doing, like, his full ridiculous, like, his set never really changes from show to show, which is part of the joke. He's just driving around in a van in Ontario right now, doing it in people's driveways because, like, it's the only thing that can make it happen. And I seriously thought about just booking him because, God, it's been so long since I've seen live music at this point. I would take the strange piss off my neighbor's driveway out of a van show. Now, speaking of pissing off your neighbors, John, if you're rocking Green Day loudly from your back deck or whatever it is right now, or Pearl Jam or Weezer, any of the hits, any of the big punk bands there, you know, Pearl Jams, you are rocking a corporation that has qualified for a federal government small business loan. Were you aware of this?
I was aware, but I wrote the news article.
Oh, well, hold on. Let me tell you. So all of these bands actually got small business loans out of the U.S. government. So the loans are part of the Paycheck Protection Program, which is where small businesses were awarded low interest loans in order to avoid furloughing employees. So, you know, like Mike Durnt wouldn't have to be, put out. So the corporations that operate numerous bands applied for these loans. And those entities that applied are the ones that operate Green Day, Weezer, Pearl Jam, and then, like, you know, bands like Guns N' Roses, The Eagles, Imagine Dragons, Chainsmokers, Nickelback is okay. Tool, Wilco, Cheap Trick, Bon Iver. So all of these people have qualified, and they were awarded in some cases between $150,000 and $1 million to kind of keep the organization afloat. So, John, I have two questions for you. One, is this article the result of you digging and figuring this out, or did this float in from somewhere else on the internet? And B, is this fishy?
Well, see, first of all, isn't Nickelback Canadian and not a small business?
Nickelback is definitely Canadian, although maybe they have like a, one of those Delaware based corporations. I don't know.
As much as Canadians love to diss on America, they're happy to register the corporation here, aren't they? I wish I could take credit for this, like I did with the last Ticketmaster one, but this was actually kind of all over the internet, and I just ganked it from, like, Rolling Stone or somebody else, you know.
Because it's very up this, your alley. Like, this is the very much a John kind of story.
Yeah. Let me give some background info. What a lot of people don't realize is that pretty much any band that's medium or big is actually a corporation, and they're run by a production company, and all the stagehands, the sound man, the people that design the merchandise, the people, you know, the people that do their insurance, even their attorneys are technically employees of the legal entity. So there's probably something called, like, Green Day LLC or something like that. And that like people think, oh, Billy Joe, Trey, and Mike own Green Day. That's actually probably not true. It might be, but it probably isn't. What's probably true is Billy Joe Armstrong, Trey Cool, and Mike Dern are co-owners of a legal entity called Green Day LLC or Green Day Inc. or some sort of either limited liability corporation or just a corporation. And that corporation owns the intellectual property of Green Day as well as all the physical assets as well. And so that company pays all of Green Day's employees, which you would think that – you would think, well, how many employees can Green Day really have? Five or six maybe? Green Day probably actually has like 50 employees or something. It's actually kind of crazy how these big bands have a lot of people working for them. And, of course, a lot of those people are family members and cousins and sons, and there's a lot of fishiness involved in there too. And sometimes, say, Billy Joe Armstrong might work for Green Day LLC. And so they do that for two main reasons. One is legal protection, that if somebody gets hurt at a concert, you can't sue Billy Joe because he didn't do anything. You have to sue Green Day LLC, who's got insurance and whose assets have been protected and so forth. And also they do it for tax purposes. So, you know, you can write off a lot of stuff when you're an LLC or a corp. And so the question is this fishy? And the answer is, I'm not sure. On one hand, I want to be like, yeah, this is totally fishy. Green Day is one of the highest earning bands in the United States. They do not need to be getting low interest loans, which the federal government is notoriously bad at collecting on or getting paid back. And so why are we subsidizing Green Day when, you know, the guy down the street that runs, you know, I don't know, the print shop is going out of business, or the restaurant down the street that's one guy or is five people has gone out of business, you know, but we want to subsidize Green Day? Well, that's a great question, isn't it? But on the other hand, Green Day does have employees, and so those are the people that make things that we enjoy, in the manner of speaking. So don't we want to keep them and therefore the arts alive and not everyone go broke? But then the other thing is, the people that work for Green Day, the people that work for Nickelback, the people that work for Guns N' Roses, are those employees that are actually like doing stuff? Some of them, yes, but some of them are also probably Billy Joe's, you know, nephew that, you know, is, you know, does quote graphic design for them. So we can get health insurance, you know, so it's, but also, not to drag this out, but this is really a minor, like, people are like, I can't believe Green Day is getting money. I hear you. But you know who else is getting money? The NFL, $1 billion medicine corporations, pharmaceutical corporations are getting loans. People that charge, you know, $800 for a pill that 3 years ago cost $20 are getting loans and subsidies. So as lame as this is, this probably isn't worth worrying about, because the real sinister guys you don't even know about, and or you really have to dig to know about, and they like it that way and they keep it that way. Word.
Yeah. I'm with you, John. You know, like you're we're reading more and more every day. It's like $1 billion hospital chains figured out a way to finagle and like get these small business loans, basically. But whatever, it's not worth even going into. But like, yeah, there are corporations that got these loans that I'm much angrier about than I'm ever going to be about like Pearl Jam. But like that being said, you know, like it just does go to show, like, you know, we're also sort of hearing that just like a lot of this money really just wasn't given out very efficiently. You know, a lot of this aid, it did go where it was less needed. And like the fact that the loans went through banks meant that a lot of times the like more well-connected businesses were having an easier time of getting their share. And like, absolutely that, you know, that is definitely true of Green Day. You know what I mean? So, do I think they're the worst for getting these loans? No, I actually think it's like, it's valid that they got these loans. I guess it's, you know, I'm not necessarily expecting, you know, Billy Joe himself to be paying his entire crew's salary while they're not touring, but you know, but it just does go to show, you know, there are probably a lot of much smaller businesses that didn't get these loans, and it's just a shame. It's sad.
I'm as much as I like making fun of Green Day, like I've got to agree there. Like it's hard for me, given my experience with this whole crisis, to to get too up on a high horse about how a lot of these loan programs and stuff like that happen, because like the one that we had access to totally saved our business. Like we kept like eight people employed because we were able to access a small business loan up here in Canada. And were that not the case, then we would have been in that like shitty situation where we had to lay off a bunch of people. And I don't know if it's completely, if it worked the same down there, but I assume it did, which is that with a lot of the programs that came in for us, it was like, there was a combination of kind of like small business loan stuff. And then there was also this, like what do we call it? We call it the CERB up here, which is an acronym, but it's like basically emergency funding. Like in Canada, you get like, I don't know, it was like a couple $1,000s basically of like, it was more or less like guaranteed income program, kind of like every 2 weeks, every month or something like that. Right. I'm not totally sure, but like basically that they opened up this thing where like, if you're laid off or you couldn't work or anything like that, or you were on employment insurance or anything like that, anyways, you could get into this program. And in Canada, they purposefully did not regulate it a whole hell of a lot, because there was that rush where they were just like, we're like, all of a sudden everyone's got to stop working and go home and close these businesses. So we're going to have this employment, we're going to have this like emergency benefit that you could get. And if it was a real government program in a normal time, yeah, there'd be all kinds of checks and balances and bureaucracy to make sure that people don't step in and try to get this money who shouldn't have this money. But given the speed at which we need to make this happen so that like everything doesn't all of a sudden fucking implode, you know, we're just going to take it on faith that you should be getting this money, and we're going to start giving it out. And I remember when it started up here, a lot of people were complaining about like, oh, this is where all the unscrupulous businesses and all the shysters and all this are going to step in and try to abuse it. And that might be happening, and it's probably happening. But on the other hand, they made it incredibly easy. So it just, people got it. It kept like a lot of people afloat. So yeah, unprecedented times, I guess. And also, like, if you are the guy that is like a stagehand for Green Day, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna go? Like, you're not gonna waltz out in the middle of the pandemic and retrain for another career or something like that. Like, you're fucked. You're stuck until things can get going again. So I certainly don't begrudge that guy for getting paid out of something like this.
I'll play devil's advocate. Nobody begrudges that guy, but the question is, how much of that money is really getting to that guy is the question, you know?
Sure, but I would just look at it.
The other counterattack is Green Day's like, we make so much money because it's the same as the CEO argument. We make so much money because we earned it, you know? We worked hard, we were talented enough. We had the talent, we had the foresight, so we could reap all the benefit. But then how come in bad times they don't have to reap the deficit, you see?
No, this is
me playing devil's advocate.
I get that argument too. I guess just that the counterattack to that would be, even though we're giving out money left and right here, there is a paper trail, and there will come a reckoning, right? So at the point when...
But see, there won't. Though, especially with like low interest federal loans, like those are notoriously, you know.
Well, yeah, I guess that. Well, that's the threat, at least, right? Like, if when things start to get back to normal, if it turns out you took all this money and you shouldn't have had this money, well, then we're gonna come knocking. But you know, I guess wait to see if that actually happens.
I wish that was the case, but in my experience, rarely do bad people really get what they're owed. I cite Roger Stone, for example. One last thing I will say is, you guys see Bill Armstrong's Instagram today?
No.
He had this big bag that said loans on it, federal loans, and it was all $100 bills, and he was like doing a burnout in his Lamborghini and like lighting Cuban cigars with the $100 bills from the bag that loan. You know, so I don't know. You know.
What an arch villain.
Honestly, I will say that, like, I'm not a huge Green Day guy, but Billy Joe Armstrong did pay to have the venue in 1234 Go Records built, and he did buy 1924 Gilman a new sound system. So you got to give him that.
I think that they have maybe made a few questionable artistic choices, but I don't think he's evil.
No, I don't think he's evil. I think he's probably just fine. Honestly, as far as rock stars go, I have never met him, but he's probably all right. It's tough being a rock star to a degree. You know what I mean? Like, imagine never having a true human interaction ever again, or almost, like, imagine being Paul McCartney. You can never be a normal person ever. You're always Paul McCartney. You know, you can't just go get a pizza. You know, anytime anybody talks to you, they're either like in love with you, or they're trying to scam something out of you. You know, even your own family, hypothetically, you know, it's tough. It's tough.
I don't have a good seg from that into the next story, so I'm just going to jump into it. John, there was a your buddy showed up in a Banksy piece here. So we talk about Chumbawamba a lot on this podcast, which is to say John talks
all the time.
John talks about Chumbawamba a lot on this podcast. And they showed up in a fairly widely spread video of the mysterious graffiti artist Banksy doing some of his work. So he went into the Tube in London. He painted a bunch of fun rats and masking related imagery around a subway car, and then afterwards he sprayed some of the lyrics from or a version of the lyrics from Chumbawamba's big one hit wonder hit Tub Thumpin' on the doors and on the wall of the station, and you can find the video for all of this over on the Banksy Instagram. John, is this a real Banksy Instagram? Like, is this not one of these people that has 45 people on every social media platform pretending that they're them?
It's verified. I think it's him.
All right, because I remember for a long time there was a there was like a Banksy Twitter account or something like that that like had like a bazillion followers, but like it totally wasn't him. So I'm never really sure how that works. If you're like, if you're one of these impresarios, you figure you want to on the one hand be spontaneous and mysterious, but on the other hand, it's really tempting to use the giant corporations communications tool to actually get that out into the world. And I don't know how you maintain your anonymity and do that at the same time. But anyways, that's not really the issue here. John, what'd you think of this fun little video here?
I thought it was cool. I think Banksy's pretty talented artist. I think his use of space and like how to repurpose things exists. I think he's exceptionally good at that. I think maybe sometimes his messages are a little too oversimplified, but that can be the point of art. You know, not every art has to be nuanced. Sometimes art as a brick through the window is very effective. And of course, I particularly appreciate that he used Chumbawamba in his video. And of course, Adam White, who is singing the refrain, "I get knocked down, but I get up again." Whose voice cuts through?
Oh, God. I don't actually know. I don't know.
Dan Bird of Chumbawamba, who played Summer Soiree 2 and who is a cool guy. Hallie Bullock, did you enjoy this video?
I loved it. I loved it. And to me, it's like there's no mistaking that it's Banksy, because it's so like it's so him. It's so delightfully like devilish. You know, he's using this like he looks like he might be a subway employee. He's using this like instrument that looks like it might be like he's cleaning the subway, but he's like tagging the subway. And the Chumbawamba thing, it made me laugh out loud. It was so funny to like tie that song into like COVID. I thought it was great. Yeah. I was like so happy to watch this.
I saw the Banksy Museum in the Netherlands. It's pretty cool. If you're out there, you should check it out.
There you go. I don't really know if I have anything to add to this. It's fun. It's a fun little video. It's a cool piece of, of art that I'm sure has already been destroyed by the authorities. So there you go.
Do you think Banksy knows that Chumbawamba is like uber punk, or do you think he just thinks they're like one hit wonders? Does he know they're punk, but he knows that most people think they're one hit wonders? That's why he used that song.
He used that song because it was recognizable, right? So I could say it's probably a little bit of both. He leveraged the fact that they are one hit wonders, but he probably
knew. Fair enough.
There you go. Hal, you got a song you want to play?
Oh, I do. Yeah. Okay. So when I was a wee one and I was a cocktail waitress at the Continental on St. Mark's Place and 3rd Avenue in East Village, there was so much good music happening in that neighborhood and in that bar at that time. And so I was really lucky. I got to see a lot of really, really, really cool shit. And I feel like most of the bands that I would see are like, have become sort of like 90s punk. Like they're part of like the folklore of like the East Village of that time. But there's like a band that I saw play a lot that I sort of feel like has just been like lost, just didn't quite like hit as big as everyone thought they would. And like, they're not in the conversation. Like when everyone's talking about a lot of the really good garagey stuff that like garagey punky stuff that came out at that time, they're all like, everyone's talking about New Bomb Turks and like a lot of other bands. And like somehow this, the band that I want to play is called the Pristines. This band was completely incredible. It was started by Mighty Joe Vincent of the Devil Dogs, and he drummed, and then he wrote a lot of the songs, I think, especially the lyrics. Up front, the two guitarists and the bass player, but these three women, they were like completely ridiculously talented and did all these like tight, like 60s girl group kind of harmonies over something that was like a lot more like punky and garagey than you're used to hearing with like that aesthetic. And this band like blew me away, and everyone thought that they were going to be like the breakout like Lower East Side East Village band of that time. And they like even I think they even had a song played on like a episode of like 90210, and I think they made it onto like the Jawbreaker soundtrack. And so it sort of seemed like they definitely got signed to a label, and it was like just as like punk was sort of like going out of like the mainstream. It was like the major labels had scooped up all these bands. And I think right around like when this band, you know, could and should have been making it, it was like the public was sort of turning away from punk, and it just didn't happen for them. But I think they are like, for the people that were there, like widely considered like one of the best like punk bands from like the mid 90s in New York City. And someone, I guess they have like a super fan that runs that record label Girlsville, and he begged them to sort of just like dig through what they have and find some unreleased stuff. And so actually just in February of this year, they put out like a whole new release of like some, I think like demos of some stuff, and it includes some of their singles. And it really like spans the spectrum in terms of like quality. Some of it really is like kind of like demo-y and gnarly, and like some of it's a little more polished, but I think it's just great. I'm like so happy that someone like wanted to celebrate how great this band was, for maybe especially now, like for people that maybe were too young to even have like been around then. So whatever, I'll stop talking about it. But this band was like completely insanely amazing to see live. They're called the Pristines, and this new album is called The Hound, which was like one of their old singles. So I think I'll just play that song, The Hound. It's like so good. I think this might be like a demo version that's on this this album, but it's just, yeah, to me, just great. Hey!
was the Pristines. You know, if you'd have asked me, I would not have thought there was going to be a Devil Dogs mention on the show tonight. So color me impressed. All right. Bunch of short stories about a bunch of media and things like that that you may or may not want to pay attention to. First of all, Martin Scorsese and David Tedeschi are directing a new documentary on David Johansen of the New York Dolls. The film uses Johnson's 70th birthday show at Cafe Carlyle from January as a backdrop. The live show found Johansen and in his Buster Poindexter persona. And according to the filmmakers, the documentary looks at Johansen from his earliest days through the New York Dolls years to his present work. And it'll be out on the Showtime Documentary Films channel at some to be determined point. John, you are you're the resident Buster Poindexter maniac around here. What's your thoughts?
Listen, David Joe is the man. He gets a fair share of credit, but he gets a fair amount of credit. But I think he actually should get a little bit more. I mean, that first New York Dolls album is amazing. The second is really good. His solo stuff is cool, and honestly, even some of the Buster Poindexter stuff is actually pretty good. I actually like the song "Hot Hot Hot," but if you ignore that, what Buster Poindexter really is David Johansen doing Louis Armstrong, which is or like New Orleans type stuff, you know, which is cool. I dig it. David Joe is an oddball. He's an incredibly talented. He actually, I think, he's one of the best punk singers like ever. I'm excited for this. What I hope it is I hope it's a look into who David Johansen is as a person, because he's always been somewhat mysterious and somewhat reserved. Like we know who Johnny Thunders was, you know, but we don't really know who David Johansen was. He was always kind of like the front man that's never in the front except for when he's on stage, you know. And so I hope it's a look at who David Johansen is as a person. If it's just like, and then this happened, and then that happened, that'll be cool. But we know a fair amount of that already. So I want to know who David Johansen is as a person. I think Scorsese can do it. I have the Scorsese Rolling Stones documentary, and I still haven't watched it, and I haven't watched the Dylan one either. So I don't know if they're any good or not. They probably are. But I mean, David Joe is the man, I'll definitely watch it.
All right, cool. Hallie, any Johansen thoughts?
I'm super excited for this, actually, but I'm with John. I would really love if it would like focus on the more personal stuff, because like, you know, I do kind of want to know like how like a kid from Staten Island, you know, like grew, which is, you know, like not considered the most artsy borough of New York City, although there's obviously been great art that's come out of it. But yeah, like how did this kid from Staten Island like turn into this like cross dressing, like, you know, founder of like punk? I would really like to know. Like I think there's just gotta be, I'm with John. I think there's gotta be like a really cool story in terms of like his history and just who he is as a person. And I really hope it does focus on that. I think that would be amazing.
Very cool. John, we have a Hawkwind story here. Do you want me to read it, or do you just want to go off on a 5-minute monologue?
I'll just do it. I mean, like, this is just hilarious. Like there's three things I never shut up about on punk news: Chumbawamba, Hawkwind, and Flock of Seagulls. And to a much lesser degree, Peter Hook of Joy Division. And so Robert Calvert, who was one of the two poets in Hawkwind, not vocalist, mind you, one of the two poets in Hawkwind, they're putting out an album, what is basically demos that he recorded in the 70s and 80s, but never really produced. And they're having other artists kind of build music behind his vocal tracks. And what just got released was Robert Calvert remixed by Flock of Seagulls, who we talked about just, what, 3 weeks ago. So I just thought it's hilarious that it's like two of John's favorite bands that like no one else really cares about, which is not true. Hawkwind actually has a lot of fans, but it's not glamorous to be a Hawkwind fan, but it is enriching. But like, two of John's like his dorkier bands are coming together to make a pretty cool 7-inch. I actually thought this track was much better than I thought it was going to be. It's like really, really good. It's going to be on an album where a bunch of people remix Flock of Seagulls stuff, like Juju remixes a track, Peter Hook remixes a track. But I don't even know if remix is the proper way to say it. It's really build a song up from the demo is the proper way to say it. I don't really know if I'm that excited for a whole album, because like when you have one guy doing a mix here and one guy doing a mix here, those albums kind of tend to be disjointed, and you know, you find yourself skipping around a bunch. I'd be much more interested in really just like an EP, like, you know, Robert Calvert and Flock of Seagulls, or Robert Calvert and Flock of Seagulls and Peter Hook all doing 5 tracks. That being said, I think this 7-inch is very cool. And as a fan, it just, even if I wasn't a fan, I think this is pretty cool, but this is way better than I thought it was going to be.
I thought this was really cool, like really cool, actually. And like, I don't know, I thought it was like, yeah, it's just interesting because it's like older artists, Flock of Seagulls, somewhat newer artists like Juju. It sort of really speaks to like the influence that he had, you know, on artists and musicians and bands and songwriters. And I think this tribute is like really, really cool. And I'm really excited to see, because isn't Juju doing that? Aren't they doing the same song on the 7-inch?
Yeah, it looks like both Flock of Seagulls and Juju remix Over the Moon.
The same song. Yeah, like I just think that's going to be so cool, because like I really like the Flock of Seagulls one, and I'm like really interesting to hear what like another band is going to do with that same song. I think this project is rad. And the video is so cool. And like they got like a super cool filmmaker to make the video. It just seems like it really is a tribute to like that this artist like is respected and like has influenced like generations of artists afterwards. And I think it's cool.
Well said, actually, Hallie. I'm glad you said that. Is I think in the States, and I don't even really fully appreciate this either, but like I don't know if people appreciate how influential Hawkwind really is. You know, influential on John Lydon, influential on Joy Division, influential Flock of all those kind of space rock or weirdo guys. You know, Hawkwind were very influential just because they are so weird. So I'm glad you pointed that out, Hallie. I didn't even think of that myself, really.
All right. So the final story, actually, before a couple points of order that we got to put out there. The final story that we want to just make mention of here is that the Dead Milkmen, the members thereof, have gone and put out a bunch of covers of their own songs. So the band has a weekly YouTube series called Big Questions with the Dead Milkmen. On the show, the band regularly, they commune remotely and they talk to each other, answer fan mail, and they sometimes give each other creative challenges. So in the last installment, drummer Dean Clean challenged the band members to each do a solo cover of a Dead Milkmen song. And you can find their covers all posted online on YouTube right now. You can go check them out. So before the pandemic, the band declared that they were going to be working on a new album, and later said that the production had been delayed for kind of all the obvious reasons. Their last LP was Pretty Music for Pretty People, which came out in 2014, although they followed that up with an EP in 2017 called Welcome to the End of the World. So if you want to go see all the members of the Dead Milkmen each doing one of their own songs in their own way, you can find it on YouTube right now. The links are all on Punk News if you want to go check that out. Before we wrap up the show, I forgot to mention right at the start, this has been, what's our branding for it? It has been the three-day
rampage.
Lawrence Arms Rampage on punknews.org. So as we record this, the Lawrence Arms have a record called Skeleton Coast. Sorry, it's their first in 6 years. It's coming out on Epitaph this week, and we have sort of been just running a barrage of Larry Arms content for you. New reviews of all of their classic albums, 3 separate interviews. So you can go check all that stuff out. Lots of Lawrence Arms love from a website that is pretty much built on a foundation of Lawrence Arms love. So it's all there. You can go read it and check it out. And to the person that pointed out on Twitter that I fucked up last week. Let's pull this up. Let's bring it out here. Hold on. Who was he? Who was he here?
I think it was Bobby.
Bobby. So Bobby pointed out that during our discussion of the Lawrence Arms song Last Words, I referred to the singer as Neil Hennessy and not as Chris McKagan. How do you? I don't know. I don't know why I'm giving this time on the show. John is wrong all the time, folks. Why can't I be wrong every once in a while? Anyways, I said that the drummer was the singer of the track and not the guitarist. So my apologies go out to Chris and to Neil and to Bobby and I don't know, whoever else for fucking that up. But in any case, if you want lots of Lawrence Arms stuff, you can go and check it all out. It's on Punk News right now. Anything else, or should I play a song?
I guess the last thing is both Hallie and Adam. I'm interested in your input. Is every year Punk News we try to do two band weeks. We didn't do two this year because I actually retired as reviews editor, but somehow I'm back again being the reviews editor, which is why we kind of did this quick 3-day rampage for Lawrence Arms. If I have more firepower in the fall, we might do another band week. The question is, do we want to do a new band or an old band? I'd still love to do the Damned and Crass. Or maybe somebody like, well, I would say like the Slits, but they only have 3 records. Who should the next band week be? I don't know. I'm thinking Damned or Crass. But right now, I don't know if our writers are experienced enough in those bands to really cover that. The last one, aside from Lawrence Arms, was Ascendance Week, which was a lot of people really dug that. So I'm open to ideas.
I'm still on. I think this is my opinion. Last time this came up, we need to do a Husker Du kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't care about Husker Du, you know. But maybe I could learn.
Well, it might fall into the same category as the Crass one, where like our kind of like young Xennial writers or whatever the fuck generation they are not going to necessarily have like a deep amount of insight into either of those bands. But I think maybe that's more the reason to do it. Like I want this stuff assigned to the young folks. They have to go like contend with these records.
Adam, I will say assignment is not Punk News' strong point. We send them out, but they don't always come back in, you know? Hallie Bullitt, why do the young people hate Crass? They should love Crass.
Do the young people hate Crass?
I think they just don't care.
The young people just hate listening to John.
I don't know. If John is telling them to listen to Crass, I think they should listen to John. I'm not sure. I don't have an explanation for why the young kids don't like Crass.
Who do you think we should do for our next band week? Who would you like to read about for an entire week, band-wise?
You know, I don't know. I think it'd be awesome if whatever band it was had, like, a woman or, like, a person of color or, you know, just some kind of diversity. That's what I would say. Yeah, maybe the Slits. I think that was a good idea.
Hmm.
Are there enough post Slits solo projects that you could make a go of it?
Yeah, I mean, we could stretch it out. Ari Up's got 2 solo albums, and actually, people don't really know this about Ari Up. Ari Up has 3 Jamaican reggae singles that she produced while living in Jamaica, but she didn't do them as Ari Up. She did them as Baby Whitey, and no one knows this except for like me somehow, that there are Jamaican 12-inch singles pressed in Jamaica in the 90s with Ari Up on the vocals, but no one knows it's her. Baby Whitey.
That's amazing. I played a show with her in like 2001, wow. I think, and she was still doing like, she was definitely doing like the Jamaican stuff.
Tell us all about this as quickly as you can. But tell us all. I want to hear, what was it like playing a show with Ari Up? Because the word is that she's actually kind of difficult to get along with, but that's, you could argue that's why she's so talented. That's the word. I mean, that's what the documentary said, you know.
I mean, she was quirky as all get out. I mean, and like, but sort of like delightful. I mean, it's easy to get along with another artist when all you have to do is play one show with them for one evening. But she was like a total delight, yeah. And so like, so pleasingly crazy, like just in the way that you wanted her to be. And yeah, it was like up there and like, yeah, definitely definitely doing like a Jamaican thing. I mean, it was just sort of like, yeah, girl, like you do you. I'm just like, it's your world. I live in it. That was how I felt.
That's all. Having that, man, Aria is so cool. Like, the Slits records are amazing, but even like her solo, I've got this rare Aria Up CD. It's Aria Up Live in Japan, and it's her doing Slits and solo stuff, and it's just so good. And actually, Adam, this will be up your alley. Adam, did you know there's an entire album of Aria Up and the Slackers? Did you know that?
No, actually didn't.
Released only in Jamaica. It's like super hard to get. But it's Aria, Vic, Aura Babajian, and a couple of the other Slackers. It's essentially the Slackers and Aria, and it's freaking great. It's freaking great.
Oh, that's cool. All right, that's on the list. I gotta write that down, actually. Gotta find that. Gotta find it, John. We play some songs from it on this show.
Yeah, dude, even if we don't do an Aria Up week, like, let's do an Aria Up week on the podcast. Like, maybe after 500. Like, Hal, you're a fan, right?
Yeah.
Let's do like an Aria Up week on the podcast sometime. You know what I mean? I just play like a bunch of like rare Aria Up stuff and some classics and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That is the plan. Although, granted, we're never going to reach 500 because we keep coming up with new episodes to stick in between now and then. So here's a song to get you out of the week. So this is from a band called No More Moments. They're a band that hails from the Siksika Nation, which is an indigenous community that is in Alberta, Canada. They are about they're north, I believe, of Calgary. It is a community that only has a population, when you add up like all the on and off reserve, of around 7,500 people. So tiny, tiny amount of people that claim heritage of the Siksika Nation right now, but they produce some cool ass punk rock out of that small population. So these guys are releasing an EP later this year called Milgrove High. The song I'm going to play is called Burn It All. It is like a frantic blast of hardcore and SoCal influenced skate punk. That EP is going to have 5 songs on it. It's going to be the band's first release in 4 years, and it's super cool, and I'm in love with the way that you like there's a ton of indigenous artists right now in Canada that are getting a lot of spotlight, and so many of them play music that is really accomplished and really interesting, but is totally not the kind of thing that I would have normally gravitated to. But this is one of these examples that I came across where I'm like, oh, these guys are playing absolutely the kind of stuff that I would normally gravitate to. So it's just kind of interesting to see that. The vocalist of this band, his name is Quarthon Bear Chief, which is awesome. And so here we go. So this is No More Moments out of the Siksika Nation. And the song is called Burn It All.
For yourself, all you know is
All right, we're done. That was the Punk News Podcast. podcast@punknews.org is how you get in touch with us if you so wish to do so. John, anything to tell the people?
500 is coming down the pike, baby. I'm telling you, 500 is coming in like 2 weeks, for real.
2 weeks, right when the virus is done.
That's 2 weeks.